Welcome back to The State of Belief. I'm Reverend Paul Brandeis Rauschenbusch in conversation with Sam Helmick, president of the American Library Association. You mentioned parents, and that, you know, as a parent of two kids in a public school, and how important and how much they love their library, I should say. But parental rights is a term out there that has one meaning when it actually could have lots of meanings. But now we think of parental rights as, this is my right to take things away from a library so that my kid doesn't have to see them, and then not necessarily interested in other parents' rights to have their kids have access to it. How do you navigate something called that very slippery term called parents' rights?
Right. I think when I think of rights, I think again of like my role as a librarian to inform and to share information and to give access to resources for anybody, regardless of what they're trying to accomplish, whether that's raising a family or running for office or obtaining a job, the information they need. And so I respond with my work of showing policies and procedures and processes where caregivers and parents have always had their fingerprints and voice in the process, because I think it's important to remind people of their rights and their responsibilities and their access and availability to those processes. Sometimes I wonder if more education about the responsibilities and roles and relationships that have existed in those spaces and more awareness of that could kind of maybe mitigate some of the misunderstanding or feeling left out. So like the Sam Helmick that didn't think there was a teen space, I didn't know about interlibrary loan and that I could borrow any teen book from a library around the country. But if I'd known about that, I might have recognized that, oh, if I'd applied myself to these processes, I would have recognized I always had autonomy in my library. And so that's how I approach it with these conversations, where public board meetings are public for a reason. The comment space in that time is necessary so that we can hear back from our community. Applying yourself to understand the educational life and responsibilities of your student is an honor. And when you apply yourself to that with alacrity, you'll see how much efficacy you can contribute to your community school library. So I'm not sure I honored your question there, other than to remind folks that rights come with responsibilities. I think sometimes it's reminding people of what their responsibility spectrum encompasses.
Yeah. And I think what I'm hearing there, which is, again, I would say you're more generous than me, but I appreciate the depth and the heart that you approach every question and of course your work. But what I'm hearing you say is, like, in some ways, don't short circuit the process by just saying it needs to get off the shelf. Get into the actual process of what is the opportunity for you to be heard in a way that can honor your concerns, and also recognize that you're part of a broader ecosystem, and you do have rights, but you also are part of a broader effort to share information, and you're part of a broader community. And I think that's where it does a little bit drive me nuts, is that the sense of my concerns supersede anybody else's concerns, and that is where I think that there's a need for faith communities that don't approve of people being able to just take things off the shelf to get equally involved. And I think what you're saying is, get involved to everyone.
Yes.
Get involved so you can be part of the conversation. But I want to, so I think, you know, a lot of times, and this we see around the country, is like a lot of times at school board meetings or at library meetings, apparently, like the people who are, you know, trying to control other people's experience are very loud and very activated. And other people are assuming that someone else is going to take care of it because we're so used to someone, you know, for these things to be in place. I think the message is, get active. And we've seen this around the country. Like, you know, when communities understand what's going on, they show up for school board meetings. They show up for city council meetings. They show up for library. And then their voices are also part of the conversation. And eventually, I mean, the hope is that people will understand, you know what, I, as a parent, have the right to go into that library and guide my child until they're old enough to make their own decisions and find the things that we as a family want. And
yes.
And that's my responsibility. And it's not my right to take away everybody else's right to find books that they might want to, you know, that their family might want to see.
100%. I think that that is how democracy thrives. I think it's a professional value. But you know a little bit about my upbringing now. So who would I be to have watched my parents meticulously and painstakingly guide my learning life and then try to control that or prescribe that for somebody else? It's just antithetical to the way I was raised.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wow. We're essentially like, what does it mean to be, I'm so grateful. I was brought up in this family that like really valued reading. And so like, and we were voracious reading, not always so like erudite or whatever. Like a lot of it was like, you know, fun science, you know, Lord of the Rings stuff, but you know, that's fine. I was around books and I recognized that books were of value. And I do think that that's another thing, like anybody taking their child to the library. I mean, at 6 months old, my kid was in a library listening to reading with other kids. One of his best friends he met at a library reading thing. Yes. You know, I mean, still to this day, he's 10 now. And so I just think like being around these spaces of learning, and it's just, it does the body good. It does the spirit good. It does the heart good. One of the most gratifying little pieces of work that we did, but really important, is a little two-pager called Banned Books, Banned Beliefs. And anyone listening, you can just, if you just put in Banned Books, Banned Beliefs into whatever search engine you have, this will come up. And this was a collaboration between Unite Against Book Bans, which is a part of ALA, and Interfaith Alliance. It was really our first blush at like, what can faith groups do to support libraries? And it has been so gratifying to see how many people are taking that up and really looking at it. So I encourage our listeners to take a moment, look at Banned Books, Banned Beliefs, if you want to learn like the first step. But Sam, we're really excited to do so much more. As someone who's been in the mix, are there moments when you want to lift up where actually there was a problem and maybe a faith community or a broader community was able to manage and move a community forward when censorship was attempted? Is there some good example that we can think of where faith folks have stepped up?
Well, I've really appreciated you when we had our Intellectual Freedom Summit hosted by the American Library Association. Was that two falls ago at the Library of Congress? It was really edifying for, I think, one of the largest gatherings on intellectual and free speech, you know, service coming together and really reconciling that this is hard work, but the mission hasn't changed. And then for me, I think it's just anecdotal because I think when you talk about libraries being local, these conversations often need to be relational, which is why, again, showing up for libraries is important, because Sam Helmick, ALA president, can tell you how wonderful libraries are all day and how much I'm here to fight for your freedom to think and read. But if your auntie says it, your dentist says it, your neighbor says it, it hits a little bit differently because now we're all involved into the conversation. So anecdotally, my parents didn't realize that they'd given me some form of reproductive education when I was in kindergarten. And I gently reminded them that I was the award-winning innkeeper's wife for 3 Christmas pageants in a row. And immaculate conception suggests something else. Like the absence of something suggests the presence of something else. And it wasn't a mic drop conversation. It was like relational, personal, graceful. And I think that that was a moment for me where it's like you could tell that like the conversation hit a higher plane and we didn't need to agree, but we understood each other more deeply because I cannot make those decisions for other people. It's not my right. Public, for me, at least in my library, is our middle name. And it's up to the public on how they want to exact their parental rights. So I'm not sure that honors your question, but I do think so much of this is relational, Paul.
Well, what I would like is next year when we talk and we introduce public library card sign-up month, which is September, is that we actually can point to some times across the country where faith communities really showed up and spoke out with their libraries and librarians and their communities and said, let's hear all the stories. Let's all come together and hear all the stories. And it's just, this is going to be a very pivotal time in American history. We need libraries. We need free libraries. We need fulsome libraries. We need libraries that are broadly financially supported by the community as well as private donations. And we need wonderful, wonderful librarians like Sam Helmick, who is the 2025-2026 president of the American Library Association. There is so much to learn about their work at ALA.org. Sam, thank you so much for joining us today on The State of Belief.
Thank you for the fellowship, Paul. It was wonderful. I thank you for supporting us and supporting the communities we serve this way. I think we're going to accomplish many great things together.
Who do you know who would get a lot out of this discussion with Sam Helmick? Please share The State of Belief with them and be sure to subscribe to The State of Belief at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. It makes a huge difference to the success of this show and all that we're talking about here. We also need your help continuing to grow The State of Belief, so please make a financial contribution today at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Religion News Service or Religion News Foundation. The State of Belief is produced by Ray Kirstein and is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week. I can't wait. Until then, I'm Paul Brandis Rauschenbusch on The State of Belief, where religion and democracy meet.